The Bill Myers Show podcast is sponsored by Clouser Drilling. They've been leading the way in Southern Oregon well drilling for over 50 years. Find out more about them at clouserdrilling.com.
We're going to have a good conversation today. DC Swamp Update today, Thursday, instead of Friday like it would normally would be. Same with Mr. Outdoors Report. Going to talk with him at 7:10 or so. And this is because I'm going to be on vacation. I'm taking a couple of days off tomorrow and Monday, President's Day. And I'm going to be just doing a Valentine's Day thing for Linda Friday. Going to go out to a nice dinner, and then we're going to head over to the Alexander Tutinoff and Dr. Brian Hall show. Hope to see you out there. Because, like I said, I talked with Alexander Tutinoff, two, 3 weeks ago, and just an amazing, amazing pianist, just a great guy, too, for that matter. So self-effacing and so humble. And yet, I would argue that he was in the top five of the pianists in the entire world. But anyway, we're going to see him and Dr. Brian Hall. Looking forward to that. That's down at the SOU Performing Arts Center, I think is the name of the place. I don't know if there are tickets still available for that or not, but I just know it's going to be a wonderful dueling piano kind of thing, and just a great evening. So we're looking forward to that. Linda's birthday is Saturday, so is my mother. It's kind of a weird thing, right? I have no problem remembering their birthdays, that is for sure. So we'll have some celebration, I'm sure, sometime this weekend, probably on Sunday instead. And then President's Monday off, and then I'll be back on Tuesday, okay? So that's going to be my plan here for the next few days. Chris Stegall will fill in for me tomorrow morning and also on Monday. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to Chris Stegall, I've had great response from it. I was very happy. I'll confess, I was not a huge fan of Hugh Hewitt, and I always used to joke that if I wanted to find out what the Swamp wanted, all I had to do was listen to Hugh Hewitt, and then I'd be pretty much told, you know, what was going on, right? And I thought it was important to hear this. Now, Chris is, I think he's an incredible host. I think it was a great choice to take over for that, good temperament and such. And he'll be filling in for me while I'm out on Friday and Monday. Take a listen, and I hope you enjoy it. And give me any feedback that you're thinking about. Now, naturally, though, they're going to be just focusing on the national stuff because that's what happens with a national show. So we'll have to focus more on the local stuff tomorrow. Tuesday, rather, as it were. Okay. North Medford High School classes are going to be back in session today. They've had engineers. In fact, I was talking to folks over at the Medford's 549C school district yesterday and ended up having Ron Havnier. I think it's how you pronounce his name. Ron, I hope I get your name right by the time you pop in here at 8 o'clock. We're going to talk about the collapse of that roof because, we've all been kind of wondering, how did it get to this point? We're starting to find out a little bit more when I talked to the people over at Medford 549C. I asked, when was this built? And they said 1967. That's what I was told then. So this has been out for a long, long time. This building has been working, the Medford High School Gymnasium, been working for a long, long time, serving well, and that this out of the blue, just really heavy, heavy snow. It's not something we normally get here in Southern Oregon. That's why it tended to cause some problems. There were some other places that also had some collapsed roofs too, but we're talking about, the school system. And apparently they were doing some snow shoveling early on, because I was wondering, it's like, wouldn't you have had a sense of urgency? Of course, I don't know. Maybe you're thinking, gosh, it's been here since 1967. Yeah, the roof is heavy with snow. And yeah, we got these seismic upgrades on the outside. I don't know. Flat roofs, there are all sorts of flat roofs here in Southern Oregon, and they didn't seem to have the same problem that North Medford did. But then again, North Medford was constructed in the late 1960s. And from what I'm told, in fact, I got to reach out to Brad Bennington and see if he has a comment on that. I would be willing to bet you that the snow load standards are probably higher for a roof now than they were in 1967. But then there's the other side of this. If the Medford 549C school district would have known this, would realize that the snow load was probably not as much for a heavy, wet snow today as it would have been for, just regular powdery dry stuff. Okay, we get that. Maybe there should have been a greater sense of urgency. Maybe there was a great sense of urgency, or maybe it just came down so fast that they weren't able to keep it up. It's like 200 by 200, so it's a pretty large roof, 200 feet by 200 feet. But I was just even, you know, thinking, gosh, you know, could it have even withstood maybe, you know, one decent snowblower machine, you know, up on top and then going and throwing the snow off the roof over the side? I don't know if that's something which is a reasonable. You know, everyone's speculating. The funny thing is that Ron was quoted in the Rogue Valley Times saying, we shouldn't be speculating upon the cause of the collapse. Well, everyone's going to speculate, Ron. God love you, you know, but everyone's going to do this. But I would figure that I would have thought that maybe just a little more concern a little sooner rather than later. They were doing a lot of work on trying to clear off the parking lots, apparently, and the sidewalks for schools that were closed. I mean, they end up closing the whole week anyway. So they knew they had a problem coming in. It was Friday when the first cracking of the beams ended up occurring. And then Tuesday, some more cracking, and then Tuesday, boom. You know, Humpty Dumpty sat on the wall. Humpty Dumpty, you know, came crashing down along with everything else. So, but anyway, we'll talk about it and also talk about what's next, because the rumors are flying around that they're not going to rebuild it and that they're just going to have the kids outside and doing gym outside. I don't know. So we'll talk with Ron about that a little bit later on this morning. 17 minutes after 6, if you wanted to weigh in on that or anything else that happens to be on your mind, 770-563-3770-KMED. Interesting that Pam Bondi is suing New York big time. Let me see if I can just pull this story up. Yeah, Pam Bondi, this is Town Hall News, you know, our news casters here, reporting this. Newly sworn in Attorney General Pam Bondi held her first U.S. DOJ press briefing Wednesday. She announcing federal charges filed against the state of New York, specifically Governor Kathy Hochul, the state's AG Letitia James, oh, what a shame, and Commissioner Mark Schroeder of the state's Department of Motor Vehicles. New York has chosen to prioritize illegal aliens over American citizens. It stops today, Bondi said, warning that states are ignoring federal immigration law. If you are a state not complying with federal law, you're next. Get ready. Now then, should Oregon be getting ready? It sure looks like it. Because remember, they went after the DMV over New York, and Pam Bondi's coming in, guns a-blazing. And I'm looking here on an interesting website, uscisguide.com. In other words, this is a, you know, how immigrants can get stuff done, you know, here in the United States. How to get a driver's license in Oregon as an undocumented immigrant. Now, you and I, we've known this for quite some time. Remember, the voters ended up voting down illegal alien driver's licenses, but our progressive legislature ended up saying, oh, no, we can't function. This is all about safety. And it's much better to have them with driver's licenses and being safety, you know, since we're a sanctuary state and they're going to be here anyway. So we have to, you know, do it under safety, you know, that kind of thing. So some of the stuff they say in the guide is kind of funny, though. Can I get a driver's license in Oregon without a social security number? No. You cannot get a driver's license in Oregon without a social security number. The Oregon Department of Motor Vehicles requires all applicants for a driver's license or state ID card to provide their social security number for verification. Then it goes to how to apply for a driver's license in Oregon without a social security number. If you're an immigrant, now, of course, see, they always call it immigrant. They never say illegal alien. If you're an immigrant living in Oregon, you may be able to get a driver's license without a social security number, but you're just required to provide proof of identity and residency as well as proof of legal presence in the United States. That's not true. I mean, they kind of talk out of both sides of their mouth here. Acceptable documents include a valid passport, visa, I-94, or other documents issued by the Department of Homeland Security. Does a driver's license in Oregon look different for undocumented immigrants? No, the driver's license in Oregon looks the same for both documented and undocumented immigrants, even though they just said that we don't provide them in the prior. You know, I don't know if they're just trying to confuse Pam Bondi or not. So Pam Bondi will be looking at this and going, gee, I don't know. Does Oregon really provide driver's licenses for illegal aliens? Well, no. you know, the immigration guide here says it talks out of both sides of its mouth. Now, Oregon wouldn't do that, would they? They wouldn't be like New York and give driver's license to illegal aliens, would they? Yes. Yes, they would. All right. What? Yeah, because here, farther down in the talking out of both sides of their mouth guide, what documents do undocumented immigrants need to get a driver's license in Oregon? Number one, a valid passport from their country of Oregon, or of origin, rather, or a consular identification card issued by the consulate of their nation. Also, evidence of Oregon residency, such as copies of bills, rental agreements, or bank statements. A valid Social Security number or an individual tax identification number issued by the federal government. That's where the feds help the illegals stay here. Oh, also a completed driver's license application form available at any Oregon Driver and Motor Vehicle Services office and proof of passing a vision test and paying the required fee. So there you go. Yes, Oregon certainly does. We've known this. Give driver's licenses to illegal aliens because it's safety. It's about safety because they drive so much better than the disorderly types that drive without the driver's licenses, apparently. And Pam Bondi says that, we're going to go after New York for doing the same thing. So I would imagine pretty soon Bondi's going to be coming after Oregon, too. I'll be curious to see what the state attorney general, who is always joining every lawsuit against the Trump administration, how he's going to respond to that. Speaking of Dan Rayfield, how's Dan going to respond to that? Something tells me that the pair that Pam Bondi is carrying are probably larger and more powerful than the pair that Dan Rayfield is walking around the state capitol with. Just saying. It's 23 minutes after 6. You can comment on that or anything else on your mind, too. This is the Bill Myers Show on Conspiracy Theory Thursday.
And more at the Jackson County Sportsman's and Outdoor Recreation Show, presented by Bi-Mart, February 21st through 23rd. Let's go!
I'm Tony Dusty with Dusty's Transmissions, and I'm on KMED.
By the way, we are going to have pairs of tickets to give away to the Sportsman's and Outdoor Show next weekend. Not this weekend, but weekend after this one, okay? And we're going to be giving some away today. We're going to give away a bunch next week, too. Want to get you in there, okay? So hang on, I'll give you your chance to call and win them here shortly. Let me grab line 2 here. Hi, good morning. Who's this? Welcome. Hello.
Good morning, Bill. It's Deplorable Patrick. I want to talk about this subject we had the other day of aluminum in the jet fuel.
Yes.
Well, if you're driving down the street and you see the next door Jumpin' Joe Jones contractor guy, he puts his contractor's number, license number on the side of the truck, mm-hmm. so that you'll know he's authentic.
Yes.
I've got a number for you, 1-819-411. That's my airframe and power plant mechanics license.
Okay.
And I have a little background in jet engines. I'm not in that now, but I have training and background in it, and they have what they call a fuel control. Now, if you put an abrasive through a jet engine, it's not just affecting the turbine and the compressor blades. It's affecting the fuel control. Fuel control is, you can think of it like a carburetor, except it's way more precise and sophisticated. And I keep hearing them say the aluminum is aluminum oxide that they're putting in the fuel. Well, guess what? Aluminum oxide is a very serious abrasive. They make sandpaper out of it.
Yeah, well, now, what the other individual had sent me to back up Lucretia's claim, this is Lucretia talking about, and the basic take on it, though, is that, it's because of aluminum nanoparticles. Now, by the way, they're not talking about what percentage of aluminum nanoparticles is part of the fuel. Now, it is perfectly possible to have nanoparticles of aluminum in there as a part of an accelerant, because as we know, aluminum burns pretty well, right? I think that's one of the reasons, you know, why there's been talk about it. But the theory that Lucretia and others of the chemtrail cult tend to come in there is that the reason that the trees are burning is that they've been doused with chemtrails from the jet engines that are just filled with aluminum and the sprays that are coming up there. Other than, in other words, it's never about it's never about drought, or it's never about 400 trees to an acre, you know, sucking all of the the juice out of the soil, et cetera, et cetera. It's usually something about that. Now, we can all have our differences of opinion, but it does appear that they have discussed aluminum nanoparticles in jet fuel, nanoparticles, but not a high percentage of it. Nanoparticles being different from the abrasive style of aluminum oxide, like you were talking about there. Does that make sense?
I've heard them say it. Some of these guys, like in these meetings, that it's aluminum oxide. Well, maybe they're just wrong. But if it's you wouldn't put aluminum, even nanoparticles. Okay, it's finer sandpaper.
Okay.
It would tear the hell out of the fuel controls. Nobody would do it. You couldn't fly the jet with that. It's
not all that different from putting sand in your gas tank to a smaller extent, as it were, right?
You put sand in your gas tank, it's going to go to the bottom. It won't go to the it won't go past the fuel filter. But you can't put an abrasive in jet fuel and have that jet. It would eat the fuel control very quickly.
All right. Thank you very much, and I will accept your advice. Okay? Thank you.
There you go. Okay. Thanks a lot for the show, Bill.
Deplorable Patrick. It is 6:29. Dave's here. Hi, Dave. How are things over at the Iron Gate this morning?
Well, light snow about 3 in the morning. About 4 in the morning, it started raining, and right now, nothing. And it's probably about 28 degrees. It's not too bad.
Oh, that's good.
As cold as yesterday.
Yeah, I know that this morning, the wind's not bad here at the airport where the radio station is, but the wind was atrocious at my house because I live over by Foothill. I think it just whips around Roxy, whips around the mountain there, and
here,
I could not keep the lids down on the trash cans as I was taking them out there. It was so heavy.
Here, the wind was really pretty heavy until after midnight, then it calmed down.
Oh.
About 2 a.m., it came back with a vengeance. And that helps dry things out here. But I wanted to talk about the conspiracy of Pam Bomber.
Pam Bondi?
Charging the state of New York,
mm-hmm.
The governor, secretary of state, and the commissioner of DMV. Those suits are civil suits, but they're conspiracy civil suits. And if they're an attorney, they can get disbarred.
Very interesting point. Thanks for making it. 770-5633. Let me go to line 2. Hi, you're on. Good morning.
Hey, how are you doing? And my name, you will regret, is Not So Crazy.
Well, I don't know. Some days you sound crazy.
Well,
convince me.
Do I
convince me of your convince me of your insanity or non-insanity today. Go ahead, Gene.
Okay. I would just call and say, you know, you go out in the garden or in the lawn and you can spray chemicals on it, but you don't need a jet engine.
This is true. Maybe they put the accelerants into Roundup for people then.
Well, what they do is they put sprayers on the wings separate from the jet engine, and they just spray the stuff they're spraying through them.
Yeah, and if you're going to do that, then you need to have some pretty high level of proof on that. Of course, I'm sure that there are YouTube videos available of here's a chemtrail pilot here, and there's a chemtrail pilot. Okay, fine. Well, let's have them blow it up then. Let me go to line 3. Hi, good morning. Who's this?
Morning, Bill. Is this me?
Yes, it sure is.
Steve in Sunny Valley.
Hi, Steve.
I also am an A&P, and I would like to point out that...
What is that?
I also am an A&P, an airframe and power plant mechanic.
Oh, okay.
Work for American Airlines before the railroad. Anyway, there's no room for extra weight like chemicals that don't pay their way, and you could follow the money trail. It's just not there. It's just ice crystals in the sky. That's all it is. But my main reason of calling is, well... Another thing is when you were talking about the trees just blow up. Well, what else burns? Wood burns. It reminds me of Monty Python's. Well, what else floats? Ducks float. So if she weighs the same as a duck, She's a witch.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Steve. That's kind of funny. It makes me laugh. All right. Hi, good morning. Who's this? This is Bill.
Good morning, Bill. It's Francine.
Hi, Francine.
Hi. I wanted to talk about the penny.
Okay.
I think that's really, first of all, I think that's part of the whole plot to take away our cash. They're starting with the penny.
And it appears that it might be successful about this, too, because last time I checked, only about 20% of people using cash in purchases. So they don't have much value for privacy, I guess.
But what's going to happen to all those ads like, you know, hurry up right now and order yours for $29.99? They're going to have to.
Well, but when you have your central bank digital currency or also your conventional checking account doing it with your debit card, the $29.99 still works, right? It's just when you're talking about a cash transaction.
The increment, they're just going to eliminate the physical coin.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. But then when you go to the store, if you went to the store to buy that $29.99 special deal, how would that work?
You're going to have to pay $30. You'll pay $30 is what it is.
And of course you will, yeah.
Now, there are other countries that have already gotten rid of their cent, of their penny. And normally what happens is that the stores round it up. It rounds up more often. It rounds up to the next nickel more so than it rounds down, usually. Okay?
Well, let me ask you this.
And so there's a bit of mild inflation that comes with it.
Right. Okay, I have a question for you here. I texted you this the other day, but maybe you didn't get it. Hmm. What if the coin, if it takes 3.5 cents to make a 1 cent coin, doesn't that automatically make the value of that coin be 3.5 cents?
No, that was just the cost that went into it. The actual value as far as the monetary side is still a penny. But you're raising an issue, though, that the metal within the penny is worth more than a penny, probably even right now.
Right.
Yeah. And that's why there's talk that there's going to be even more penny hoarding now, because when they end up saying this sort of stuff, they're making it clear that, yeah, that penny's worth more than a penny if you were to even melt it down, most likely. Or at least getting pretty close. Yeah.
I have an interesting little tidbit to tell you. You know, I used to live on the waterfront, people with a lot of boats, and we were very into wooden boats and so forth. And many times when people were repairing boats with, you know, they'd use the copper nails, and they would use pennies as the,
washers?
Yeah, as the washer.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, though, I think it is a, I don't think it is, a, I think it's zinc. With a copper coating. That's all it is right now. Maybe we should just go back to World War II and just use the steel pennies. Appreciate the call there. All right, we got the DC Swamp update is coming in there with Rick Manning. Mr. Outdoors will join me. We'll have a lot of time for your calls at 7:30 on Conspiracy Theory Thursday, too. And then the North Medford High School collapse discussion with Ron Havniar from Medford 549C School District. That'll be at 8:10.
Here at American Rancher Garage, we respect and support those individuals.
770-KMED.
This is the craziest party that could ever be. Don't turn on the lights, because I don't want to see. Mama
told me let's go. By the way, I know that he said go ahead and call right now. Hold the calls. We will have some open phone time a little bit later, because I got to dig into some stuff here with the DC Swamp Update. Rick Manning is the president of Americans for Limited Government, DailyTorch.com. Rick, it is great to have you back on. Well, the news continues to come out like a fire hose. And are you able to keep up? Just kind of curious. You keeping up okay on this?
As much as you can. It's a truth be told. There are 10 things that happen every single day that normally I would be all over and really dissecting, and you have to pick which ones you think are important and focus on those. And, you know, there's a, and obviously, you know, if you just focus on what Elon Musk is doing with Doge, at the behest of the president, so it is part of the White House. If you just look at what he's been doing, there's 10, 15 things that he's doing a day that you sit there and you go, this is the most amazing limited government thing, or this kind of concerns me. But then you have things like Vice President Vance talking before the world, really, in Paris, about the future of AI, and actually presenting a position that I'm a little more cautious about AI than he is, but presenting a vision for AI in the future that's was articulate, smart, and smacked around the Europeans without with a smile. And so it was a really, really, anybody who, 15 minutes of your life, you know, sometimes you watch these videos and you sit there and you spend 15 minutes watching cat videos, 15 minutes watch fans speak to the to the world in Paris this, a couple of days ago. You will learn a lot about AI policy. You'll learn a lot about how the Trump administration is viewing the future of the world and the future of the United States and how we're going to become and hold our place as being the dominant economic power in the world. It was a tour de force. It was articulate. And he first time I think they.
In other words, J.D. Vance did dad proud. I'm talking about proud as far as Donald Trump, right?
Would you
say that, right?
Yeah, he's a unique person in that he is able to speak like someone from Yale, but communicate like someone from rural Ohio, mm-hmm. And it's a unique combination. And it was a very smart speech, and I just thought it's a good listen. For people who are trying to figure out stuff in that field, it was a good listen because it gives you a pretty good direction of where the U.S. is going and what the Trump administration policies can be on that important area for the next 4 years.
Why don't we go to Dozier for a little bit, all right? And there has been a lot of incoming. Now, most of the incoming coming from Democrats has been just hissy fit. Hey, you're upsetting our playground, kind of stuff. You know, how dare you stop a transgender opera from being, paid for in Ireland? those kind of things, right? On USAID. And then I'm looking at Dr. Naomi Wolf's piece on Substack, her outspoken Substack, and it was printed on Lou Rockwell this morning. And I've talked to Naomi a lot of times over the years, and I've really admired her intellect and the way she tends to look at things. She's one of the last few what I would call a liberal, these liberal in the classical sense that exists, because she's still a woman more of the left than of the right. But she's certainly broken bread with the Trump administration, found common cause on doing things, kind of like what Elon and various other people have done too. And she's concerned, as she calls it, Elon Musk's digital coup because of what happens to the data, even though the Treasury data that Doge looks at is read-only, supposedly. That doesn't say that it can't be copied or moved along. And she reminds people, and this has been my concern about Elon involved in this too, as smart as he is still one of the, he's the richest guy in the world and owns several multinational companies. And has managed to leverage government access for fun and profit for a lot of years. So I can understand why people don't always trust him. Would you agree on that? What do you think?
I think Elon Musk's history would give people pause. And when I used to call him a venture socialist.
A venture that's a great one, said Cap. That's great. Great term. I'll remember that.
Okay. So it was but I will tell you, it's first of all, I can defend Elon, but getting to the all day long, and I would, because this is a guy who, like Trump, he's put his reputation and truthfully his companies on the line, because the countries around the world who may be being pressured by Trump, mainly countries that are developed over the hill countries like Europe and maybe Canada, they don't like Trump. They don't like what Trump's doing. They don't like the whole U.S. money machine that they've fed off of as much as anybody and benefited from as much as anybody being exposed. They're tied in with the deep state and intelligence communities, deeply tied in. And so it is after all, the whole Trump-Russia thing was a sort of a Five Eyes.
That was an intelligence agency coup. Attempt,
yes.
Is what that was.
And it
okay.
was run out of the CIA office in London, and it brought assets in from Italy, and it brought assets in all over the place to try to entrap Trump. And it was so I think that's been pretty well documented. So he's put a lot. He's putting his companies on the line when you get down to it. And if I were a shareholder, I'd be very concerned about it, because his companies are dependent to some extent on things like EV mandates. And recognize one of the things the Trump administration is doing is they're unwinding, they're un, well, first things it does is unwind the EV mandate.
Mm-hmm.
That directly impacts Elon Musk in a negative way. So he's not, if he's using influence to get things done for his companies, he's not doing a very damn good job. But yes, the data is what data is everything. Tesla is a data collection company more than it is anything else. It's how they're actually going to make money. But it's a, but yeah, he's going to have, he has access to data. The question is this: compiling data in a government database is what governments do. And he is performing a legitimate role within government. The DOGE was actually created out of a department, a White House little department that Obama created to do digital security work. And what Trump did is he took the digital security work, that little department, and which was infested with lefties, and he got rid of all the people who were there. And he said, Elon, we're going to take this department, we're changing its name to DOGE, and we're going to appoint you to a position that required that's short term, temporary, also is part time. So you're only allowed to work so many hours on this, so many billable hours or days, I guess it's by days. And you can't work any more than that many days on it. And it's a, and that was all created by Obama. And so he's completely following government rules in terms of, and then he's got the full power and authority of the President of the United States. So given that, when Elon Musk is looking at, is going through data, what he's doing, and the people are compiling the data, he's acting as President Trump's eyes.
Okay.
And saying, and he, and President Trump has every right to have him do it, and it's perfectly legal under the law. And if he transferred any of that data into a, or created a back door to be able to access that data for, he'd go to jail.
So don't worry too much about the backdoor access is what you're saying.
I'm saying it would be a huge risk because the first thing that the next administration, and let's just, you know, hypothesize a negative, and that, you know,
let's say it wasn't a GOP administration, right. And then Congress got back in power. Okay.
The next administration would sit there and look, a Democrat administration would immediately do a forensic on everything that Elon did. And if they found any backdoors were built in the system, any shenanigans at all, Elon Musk, a man who has $500 billion, would be a fugitive. And when you have $500 billion, you can live a pretty good life as a fugitive. But
yeah, you could buy a country. Yeah, you buy a country or two at that.
But the fact is, that's correct. But what Elon Musk, his vision, what he wants, is he wants to go to Mars. And most of his companies are built along the idea of we're going to go to Mars. We're going to go to Mars, and his companies are kind of built with the idea that. They're developing technology here that can be applied there.
And if so, if I'm going to jump ahead on you, if you don't mind, Rick Manning, by the way, president of Americans for Limited Government, is that Elon wants to find the crap in the budget so there's money to do that and keep the tax 100%. Cut, I guess, right?
100%.
Got it.
He wants to find the money so they can invest in the Mars project. And that is because it's even the Mars project is – he might have he's on the books worth $450 billion, but that would mean he'd have to sell all of his stock and everything.
Yeah, it's not $450 million or billion liquid.
It's not cash.
Yeah, it's not cash.
It's not sitting in his B of A account.
Mm-hmm.
So because then he basically owned B of A, but it's a but so that's the risk for Elon Musk if he does anything that is even slightly. Questionable is he loses everything. And that is not a risk I believe he's willing to take.
All right, that's reasonable. So you have to get rid of condoms for through USAID for Hamas in order to
I might support condoms for Hamas.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, if Planned Parenthood wants to go on mass sterilization, that might be a starting point. But the I'm
I know you're having fun with this. It's okay. We take the context. All right.
I'm saying that for anybody who might be running this back a month from now.
Mm-hmm. All right. So don't worry too much about this right now. Now then, we have a lot of lawsuits, and you knew there were going to be a bunch of lawsuits coming out right. from the swamp and from the hissy fitters against what the Trump administration is doing. One, though, judge ended up coming out and saying, yeah, the buyout's okay, right? Perfectly legal. And do you think that ultimately more of these lawsuits that have been filed end up going away for much the same reason, that the executive has the right to control what's going on in the executive administrative state?
Okay.
What do you think?
Let's take a look at the one that's most troubling to me anyway.
Okay.
One that's most troubling is a lawsuit that says that DOJ, that the a White House designated appointment, mm-hmm. that Donald Trump, his designee, can't go and look at records. Can't look at how the money's being spent.
That's legal nonsense, I would think, right?
That is, well, it is legal nonsense, but the objective is to say, okay, well, you can't do this, so they can throw as much money out the door to the left with one last injection of money towards 2026. That's what, the intent of, they know it's legal nonsense. They just want they want 6 to 9 months of being able to wring every dollar they can get out of this thing and effectively make it so Donald Trump doesn't get to be president again. Mm-hmm. That's what this is about.
Well, but Donald Trump's not going to be president again.
Well, no, I'm talking about again, as in how the left canceled Donald Trump.
Okay.
The capacity to have the authority of the president in Trump won.
Trump is much smarter this time around and much better organized, for sure.
What he learned is I'm not going to ask for permission this time. I'm just going to go do it.
Got it.
And it's I think a lot of the things they're doing, for instance, if I would far prefer them say, we're going to go to Congress and we're going to ask them to give us the ability do a reduction in force of 20%, up to 20% of the federal workforce.
Could they get that through Congress right now, you think?
The only way to do that is through the budget reconciliation. Unfortunately, I've been unable to convince anybody in that process that they want to do that. Mm-hmm. If the White House thinks they can do it without Congress and actually thinks if Congress doesn't do it, if it gets brought up and Congress doesn't do it, it hurts them in court. So they're not pushing it. But the fact of the matter is, I would far prefer to have Congress eliminate 400,000 positions out of 2.2 million approximately. 400, that's 20% of positions. And that way, 4 years from now, 8 years from now, 12 years from now, even if those positions are left vacant, somebody's going to be able to fill them. You have to get rid of the positions in order to make it so they don't exist. And then future president would have to ask for restoration of more positions. And Congress, the one thing even Democrats don't want to do is voting on growing government. So my preference would be going to Congress, get them to do it. There's no legal challenge then. They have an absolute, there's no question. And the fact is what they're trying to do is a complete government reorganization. And I really like the idea of Congress at least putting their imprimatur on it and saying this would be, yes, government needs to be reorganized. We've been proven that it's too big, and we're going to delegate to the executive branch their rightful responsibility to do that, and we're going to give them up to 20%, and we're going to plan on giving them authority up to 20% cut in personnel. And from a budgeting standpoint, we're going to plan on that on those cuts being at least 10% of the workforce. That's what I would do. And that's certainly what I've been urging. But the fact is, green eyeshade accountant type of people are busy looking at this stuff, and they're not looking at transformative government. They're looking at trying to figure out how to get the capital gains tax down 2% and stuff like that. And they're worried about that kind of stuff as opposed to the
which is small ball in the grand scheme.
Which is small ball. It's It gets people corporate bonuses. That's just true. So it's and there's no corporate bonus in getting 20% reduction in force in the federal government.
And you know the other problem with reducing all the federal government staff, which I think is great, I don't know if it necessarily, if most people on Main Street even know or care or understand how that affects them. Because all they look at is $6 eggs for dozens, you know, $8 eggs for dozens. They're still looking at it that way. Is that a fair assessment of where we are right now?
I think it's a fair assessment, but you have to deal with that with the some of the regulatory stuff that's been done to ag being cut away in terms of meat prices and stuff. The allowing cattle to graze again. Actually, that increases cattle herds, increases in meat supply, which lowers price and lowers the cost of raising beef, which your beef is bad because of methane. So there was a lot of this stuff ends up going up because food prices go up because of environmental policy. The bird flu, which there's a pretty strong case that's been made, was artificially created. By one activist inside the government who then went around and slaughtered millions of chickens, which then made it so there weren't as many hens laying eggs, which then made it so you had a lower supply of eggs with the same demand, and guess what? You end up with higher prices. There's a pretty good case that the whole bird flu, which affected the supply of eggs, may not have been completely legitimately based upon science. And so there's a lot of
that
stuff that's, so ultimately the price of eggs, as farmers are allowed to have, have poultry farms and grow their poultry farms. And as some of the restrictions have been put in terms of growth in that area, are in place, you're going to end up with more hens, and you're going to end up with more eggs, and you're going to end up with a price, going down. But this is a supply and demand situation. If you kill all the hens, you have fewer eggs.
Oh, absolutely.
We all know that.
Yeah, Rick Manning with me this morning. Hey, Rick, I was actually glad to hear Hegseth say the other day that, no, Ukraine, you're not going to be able to go back to your pre-2014 borders. Not going to happen. And then pressure being brought on Putin, too. Do you think there's a pretty good chance that we're going to get Trump and Putin together and get this over with here pretty soon? What's your overall take?
I think who is it? He's sending, I think Rubio and the Senate and the Treasury Secretary. I think that's who he's sending for meeting with Putin this in this upcoming week and a half. A presidential summit is, in that kind of meeting, takes months and months of planning. And Trump operates on Silicon Valley time, and so they're trying to fast forward everything. Bottom line is, I think yes, they're going to come to an agreement. I think that they, assuming Russia wants to come to an agreement, I think they'll come to an agreement. Trump did something with Hamas at the very beginning that people were going, he's basically giving Hamas what they want. Got their ceasefire and said, give up some hostages. And then Hamas started playing games and said, we're not going to.
And then he essentially says that you either do what we say, or we're going to drone your butt, I guess.
He says, no, we're going to let Israel do it.
Yeah. Well, okay. Israel will drone their butt. Okay.
Yeah, all of the prohibitions the U.S. government that put on Israel to be restrained will be gone because you haven't dealt in good faith. There was a pathway for you to stay in existence. You violated that path. We've gotten off of it, and release all the hostages by this Saturday, or you're not gonna live on Sunday. I mean, pretty simple, and it's a message to Qatar, which has been ostensibly an ally, and who the guy who's been negotiating a lot of this for Trump, and the name I don't remember the guy's name, but he's sub-cabinet guy who's been negotiating in defense, who's been negotiating this. He's got historic business ties to Qatar. And that government in Qatar is going to have to make a decision. Are they going to turn over the Hamas criminals who orchestrated the murder of Israeli civilians in the surprise attack? Is he going to turn them over, Are they going to turn them over? Are they going to lose the base and cutter? Are they going to lose? Are they going to end up being isolated by their neighbors who are on Trump's side, by their neighbors, and turned into a rogue state with that ends up getting overthrown?
Okay.
So it's, they're playing hardball on a lot of stuff, and it's a I have to tell you, the thing that's happened to D.C., we kind of got used to operating at Joe Biden speed.
And now it's about quadruple in speed, right?
No, it's exponential.
Yeah.
Quadruple would be normal. Okay.
Okay. Quadruple would be Obama. Okay. It's Obama. Much faster.
This is exponential Obama. And it's because Donald Trump, A, knows what he's doing. He came in with a plan. And three, he knows he doesn't have time.
Yeah. He's got to do a lot here quickly. Speaking of time and doing things quickly, Pam Bundy suing all the cast of characters in New York. And I was just talking this morning how, Oregon is just like New York and provides all sorts of driver's licenses to illegal aliens and all the rest of it. Dan Rayfield, our new attorney general, seems to be doing nothing but joining the hissy fit Trump resistance lawsuits is what we've been noticing here. How long before you think Bundy turns... maybe put it this way. How long do you think it'll take for AG Bundy to come after Oregon and Tina Kotek and RAG for all of their immigration thwarting and illegal alien supporting programs? What do you think?
Well, it'd be really helpful if federal officials who are Republicans who are based in Oregon were to approach the attorney general with specific concerns that they have about things that are being done. Mm-hmm. And compelling, your sheriff and your local counties in Southern Oregon to comply with the Oregon ICE law when it has a real problem.
Because all the sheriffs have gone on the record because the Oregon State Sheriffs Association said, "Hey, you better do the sanctuary state law," right?
Well, and the challenge is, different states have different, counties and cities are authorized under different things under state constitutions, and it just very well be that, in Oregon, I haven't looked at the constitution lately of Oregon, but it very may be that the cities and counties are a servant master relationship with the state.
Essentially, we are, yeah.
And hence, they really don't have a choice under state law because the state can basically wipe them out and come in and say, no, we're taking over. So that's the reality of why some of the sheriffs and others aren't maybe less strong on this than they should be. Having said that, local federal official needs to do something like send to the Civil Rights Division and say, I've got concern that people are being disenfranchised due to the mail-in voting program and the lack of any security or voter rolls.
And we've already known, and there was evidence, they even admitted that there are, people who are not supposed to be voting. They were registered to vote.
And here's the rationale under the law is that the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice, which Pam Bondi controls, and which somebody who's concerned about voter security will end up running, the Civil Rights Division has a responsibility of protecting all Americans. Equal one vote, one man, one vote, one mm-hmm. person, one vote. And when you have a system that is deliberately allowing people who are not eligible to vote to participate in the system, and you have massive ballot insecurity the way that you do in Oregon, I think there's a pretty darn good case to be made for a lawsuit against Oregon demanding that the voter rolls be cleaned, as the Motor Voter Act requires, and B, that there be security measures in terms of mail-in ballots, so that you're sure that people aren't being accumulated at apartment complexes from everybody who moved, and then be voted by people who just happen to be collecting them or postal workers.
All right, fair enough. Rick, I appreciate the talk, and we will kick into more conversation next week about that, okay? Thanks so much.
Yep, absolutely. Take care, man.
All right. DailyTorch.com. And by the way, there's a great article up there from Robert Romano.